Welcome to the Beyond the Cover podcast, a podcast that takes you on a journey beyond the pages of your favorite books. I'm your host, Lauren Cabello. Join me for captivating conversations with the brightest authors who are also celebrities, influencers, entrepreneurs, and successful business owners shaping our worlds today. We'll go beyond the surface, uncovering the motivations and driving forces behind their compelling narratives. Let's uncover the extraordinary together. Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Cover. I'm so excited to have Carrie Burke here with us today, who is a content creator with almost 5 million followers, 3.8 million on TikTok, and almost a million on Instagram. She's an author, and her latest book is called The Real Life Rom-Com, which I actually have been reading at home in my office because it's geared towards teen girls. I have two teenage girls, and I'm like, what am I in for? So welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here today. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here. Almost 5 million followers. How the heck did you get there? Talk to me through the process. I mean, that's every person's dream. If I ask my kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? They want to be TikTokers or YouTubers, you know, and they want to have all the millions of followers. So how'd you get there?
Well, for me, it was never really about social media. I've always been a writer. I wrote children's books with my mom when I was a kid, starting when I was 8. So I've always been a writer. I had a fashion blog when I was 16. And to try and get exposure for my fashion blog, I would post on Instagram a lot, these fashionable outfits. I'd post my articles on my stories. I think I gained a following of about 100K on Instagram. It wasn't anything too crazy, but it was a substantial following. And then during the pandemic, TikTok was really popular. A lot of my friends were going viral on TikTok. So I downloaded TikTok and I just started posting. I wasn't seeing much success at first. And then one night I posted a fitness tutorial. It was how to get abs in 10 days. They say it works. Who knows? I was just posting it to like see what people would think, how they would react. And it got a million views overnight.
Wow.
It has almost 10 million views now to date. So that's kind of how it all started. I started doing fitness videos on TikTok. That kind of morphed into life hacks, product reviews, which is more what I do now. So testing out beauty products and fashion products. And I reached a million followers on TikTok in about 6 months. I think just because the pandemic, everyone was online and focused on getting their entertainment on social media because nothing else is really going on. So that's how I got so much engagement and following on TikTok. And then from there, it's just kind of grown.
That's amazing. So what were you doing? 16, you start your Instagram and your fashion blog. Were you working another full-time job after 16? What were you doing during the pandemic? Was that your full-time job? Like what was going on then?
I've been a student this entire time. So I was a full-time student. I was class of 2020. So I didn't get a prom or a graduation. So I was at home basically just like waiting for my online graduation when I started posting on TikTok. And as my following continued to grow, I had my first semester of college online because of the pandemic. So yeah, I've just been, I guess, working as a student the entire time while also writing on the side. In college, I've been freelancing for a bunch of different publications like New York Post, Page Six, Newsweek, because that's ultimately my end game. And then also, obviously, my real life rom-com, I was working on that the entire pandemic.
Oh, that's awesome. So this book is really how to build confidence. And it talks about so many things in here about dating and your first love and all of that. I love these double taps that you do throughout the book.
I call them service boxes. I didn't want the book to be too much of an advice book because you have enough of those out there. I call it a memoir manifesto. Like it's more memoir based. It's nonfiction, but also there's those helpful tidbits in there telling people what to do and what not to do when they're dating.
Yeah. So who would be buying this book? Moms for girls or girls themselves?
I think both. I think this book is targeted towards teenagers. I wanted to create something that was really relatable. This is a book written by a teenager for a teenager. You don't see much of that out
there. You don't.
It's all by adults for teenagers, which is great, but I think this adds a really fresh perspective. So I think this is for teenagers, and I think it's a really good tool for moms to connect with their daughters as well and kind of open the floor for important conversations about dating and relationships and sex, because I talk about it in this book really openly and vulnerably. And I think that's something that's not really done a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's really what differentiates this book, I think, how candid it is.
Yeah, I agree. And it opens up a conversation. Even when I was looking through, actually, there's a chapter in here about your first love. Mm-hmm. And it's back here a little bit. One of my kids was going through a situation where they were dealing with their first love. And that was really hard for them to deal with it. But I was able to talk to her about this part of the book, which was really helpful for me as a parent as well. So you're going through the pandemic, you're seeing some growth on your TikTok, then you're writing this book. You've also acted in some really cool things as well.
Kind of on the side.
On the side.
Younger, yeah. Not as much anymore, but when I was younger.
When you were younger.
When I was trying to figure myself out.
Yeah. That's cool. So before we started filming, one of the things that I was crediting you on is I think a lot of people in the younger generation, I would say for you, you grow this huge TikTok following and that's the end game. I've made it. I have almost 4 million TikTok followers. I've made it in life. Mm-hmm. You have gone and written a book now. You have all of these other goals using your following. I know you love writing. So why a book? Why did you go back to this?
I think in general, social media has never been the end game for me. It's not sustainable. We've seen platforms like Vine and Musical.ly fall off just like that. We see in the news right now, they're thinking about a potential TikTok ban.
Yeah, I saw that.
So you never know when social media is going to go away. And I've kind of been cognizant of that the whole time. So in terms of writing, that's always been my end game. I wanted to work at a magazine or a newspaper, a certain publication. The book was never in the cards. I actually started writing the book unofficially when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I'd just gone through my first breakup and I wrote this personal essay the day of the breakup about how I was feeling and I kind of put it away. I never really liked to write about myself because it was too vulnerable for me. It was too hard. And then over the pandemic, I was doing a lot of reflecting. I opened up that essay that I wrote. And I just kept writing because I remembered things and I wanted to talk about the healing process and a lot of those other complex emotions that I'd gone through in the 2 years post-breakup. So I kept writing. I sent it to a friend. She loved it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep writing about these dating experiences because this is making me find a lot of closure. So I wrote a few of those as a form of self-therapy and I sent it to that same friend. And I said, you know what? I'm going to submit this to a magazine. Like maybe it'll run in the personal essay section. And she told me that it would be much stronger as a book. I've always been a co-author with my mom. I never was confident enough to do a book by myself. I was scared, but I was like, why not? So I put it all together. It was basically done because I had so many personal essays. I stuck them all together. It was like 200 pages. And I was like, okay.
You're like, I got a book.
I guess I have a book. And then I contacted my book agent from when I was 8, basically, and said, hi, remember me? My mom didn't know much of what was going on. I left her out of the process as much as possible because I wanted to do it all by myself. Mm-hmm. So I contacted my book agent and she was interested and basically said, like, okay, like, when can you get the book to me? And I was like, well, actually, it's done.
Oh, that's so cool. That's like not the process that most people go through.
Yeah. Usually for all cases I've done in the past with children's books, you submit the proposal, then you get a deadline for the book. So I had the book. The book was done. Mm-hmm. I submitted the book to her and she decided if she liked it. And then from there, we worked on a book proposal together and she took it out. So it's kind of a reverse process.
Reverse process, yep.
But it kind of fell into my life organically. I mean, I never planned on writing it. It just happened.
Yeah, that's really cool. Your friends and followers, have they bought it? What was your book launch process like?
Oh, wow. It was surreal. I think having a large following, I'm very fortunate that I've gotten so much support from people out there. Especially because this is my target demographic on TikTok is ages 13 to 18. This is directly for those people. So I did crazy promotion on TikTok,
you
know, posting POV videos, posting with the book. I had a giant book cover poster that I would post with. I did a big launch party.
Your launch party was phenomenal.
Thank you.
Like you knocked it out of the park. Go to her TikTok, watch her launch party videos. And you need to plan a launch party like what she did.
Thank you.
She, like, you killed it.
Thank you.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I planned it all myself. I had such like a specific vision in mind. I contacted this restaurant, Julon Club, that I've been obsessed with since I was like a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want you to host my party. I want this huge floral display with my book, you know, Unique Flower Creation, just knocked it out of the water. And then I had like 200 people there.
That's amazing.
It was crazy. Yeah.
Now, after that, with your writings, were you writing articles about it? Did you go and do press? What was that like?
We did a book tour. It started off the day of the book launch in New York. I did a signing at Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. We had a billboard in Times Square, which was really cool.
That's amazing. That's like everybody's dream. Yeah.
The billboard was only up at night, and okay. I was so exhausted, but it was going up at like 10:30 p.m. So I went after dinner. I took my mom and my boyfriend, and we just like stood there, and we waited for it to go up. And we just like took so many pictures. It was insane. After that, we went to Jersey, Connecticut, Tampa, LA. Long Island, I think, had the biggest turnout because most of my following is from Long Island, oddly. Me being a city girl, I was like shocked. But it was amazing to see people and hear them tell me their stories. I had a really sweet moment with a group of girls on Long Island where they asked me about a specific personal situation in their life about a guy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I think he's going to ask her out tomorrow. Like, what should I do? Mm-hmm. And they were just listening so intently. And I would give them advice. And then I'd point them to a spot in the book. And I'd be like, to read more, please go to this point. And
I love that.
Read at home.
I know as a parent of teen girls, my daughter will be 13 in a couple of weeks. And then my other one is 14. Mm-hmm. So yes, I can give great advice as a mom, but coming from somebody like you is a lot more valuable. So you know, these girls are listening to mm-hmm. me. That's a big responsibility.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that? I don't want to say pressure, but like knowing that you have almost 4 million followers, you have a book that is helping them with that. How do you handle the kind of content that you put out and screening mm-hmm. to make sure if it's right for them?
Yeah. I try to be the best role model I possibly can. I think it helps having been in media and kind of in the public eye from a young age. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of have a sense of what's appropriate and what's not to post online. Just being as open and candid as possible on the internet, I think, is important because that's what resonates most with people, as it does in this book. I mean, as you've seen and read in the book, I'm not perfect. I make a lot of mistakes along the way. Mm-hmm. I don't think teenagers need a role model who's perfect. They need someone who's honest and owns up to their mistakes because that's real. You don't want to follow like some picture perfect girl right. online. You want to follow the one that's authentic, admits to her mistakes, and is relatable in that sense. That was my goal with this book. I didn't want to almost like villainize the boys that I was right. dating. I mean, a lot of them sucked, and I'm the first to admit that. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, a lot of the ways that I was looking at these situations were immature because I was young and I was growing up. But I admit that in the book because I'm writing about it and reflecting on it mm-hmm. from a later time.
Yeah, I love that. So funny story is when I was telling my kids, because mm-hmm. I come here once a month from upstate New York to film, and they're like, so who are you talking to this time? And I was like, I'm talking to this and this and this. And I'm talking to Carrie Burke, who has. And they're like, wait, Carrie? Like, one of my daughters follows you. Mm-hmm. She's like, she's got millions of followers. And you would have thought I was meeting the president.
Oh,
like, that's how highly people really think of you. And I've been in media for years. They could care less about the Today Show or the national media these days.
I care.
Yeah.
I'm like, I care.
Well, we care about that. But the kids these days, they care about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I know as a publicist that our clients, they want what you have. I'm sure people are pitching you all the time to get on your platform, to get to your audience. So how do you manage that as well as a content creator mm-hmm. now with people wanting to get in front of your people? I know when I was an influencer, I was very protective over my audience. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had to approve everything that was going to them because mm-hmm. I was really protective over them. So how do you deal with that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I never had almost 4-5 million followers. How do you handle those conversations?
Yeah, I'm also very protective over my following, and everything is screened before I post it. Mm-hmm. So I get sent dozens of products because my niche is product reviews. But everything that comes in the mail, I either keep to film, or if it's something that's not so appropriate, I'll just pass it along to a neighbor or donate it, find some other way to get rid of it. But yeah, I think it kind of goes without saying, but my following is ages 13 to 18. Obviously, I don't post anything too sexualized. I mean, no like sex toys, no CBD. I've gotten emails for everything.
I'm sure.
I got a pitch for a vibrator the other week.
And you're like, and I have 13-year-old like, girls.
I was like,
seriously?
I have a 13-year-old girl. Like, come on. It's just not my audience. Even though like I'm 21 and I'm more mature than I was when I first started TikTok, my following is younger. I'm producing content for a younger audience. So I always have to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Are you really big into get ready with me's and skincare trends and all of that? Because I know that's all my girls watch. That's all they're watching right now.
Occasionally, I do a Get Ready With Me video. I probably should do more of them because I feel like Alex Earl set off that huge trend. But not really. I think what's worked for me all these years is taking a product, just trying it out. If I mess it up or if the product's really bad, then I'll show it really bad. But yeah, I think Get Ready With Me's is definitely something I'd want to tap into more. It's just like a time-consuming thing because I'm not getting ready every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like 30 minutes before I came here, I just came back from a run and I was sweaty and disgusting. And all I wanted to do was like collapse into bed.
Yeah.
Like that's me half the time. I'm not in full makeup, full contour, all of that. So if I'm doing a Get Ready With Me, it has to be the right occasion, which is probably like the 1 or 2 days during the week where I'm wearing makeup and filming.
I'm the same way. It's funny. If you were to come to my house, I have an office building, but half the time I work from my home. And if you were to come into my house half of the day, I'm in sweatpants with like a tank top and a suit jacket on top with slippers on. I want to look presentable on my Zoom calls, but I'm in like my boyfriend's sweatpants and like slippers because I just don't want to deal with that every day.
You should see what I wear to school. It's like the same thing. Yeah. Sweatpants, a hoodie. Sometimes I show up to school after running 8 miles and I walk into class like dripping in sweat and I'm just like, I don't care.
So your classmates like know who you are? Are they like,
not really.
Okay.
I mean, I keep it very low key. I did take a social media class three semesters ago. And that was kind of like bound to happen. They figured it out.
Yeah.
Because I had to give a class presentation about how to build a personal brand. And I was like, I can't not talk about my own platform. So then I kind of exposed myself to the whole class.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, because I want to be seen on the same level, the same playing field as everyone in my class, especially in my journalism classes. I mean, it doesn't matter who you've written for, how many books you have. I'm still a college student, and this is my first time in a specific class as it is for everyone else. So I just try to kind of like humble myself and learn on the same level as everyone else. And I think that's helped me a lot throughout college because I have learned so much.
I think that's so wise. And a lot of people with the kind of following that you have wouldn't be that way. They'd be like, look at me, look at me. I have so many followers. It's something to be very, very proud of for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. Maybe when I was first blowing up on TikTok in 2020, I had a brief moment like that where it was just this novelty of having a following and people recognizing you wherever you go. And that was something I'd never experienced before. And it kind of gets to your head a little and your ego.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the first to admit it now because I look back and I'm just like, what was that all for? Like, that's not important. Like, the people I pushed away to during that time because I like thought I was so much better than everyone else. Mm. It's just not fair. And I kind of like try to make up for it now by just like trying to be the best, like most humble person I can. But I also don't blame myself because when you have a following, when you're blowing up for the first time, like you don't really know what to do with yourself in this whole new world. Like it's very stressful.
Yep.
You're getting a lot of hate along with a lot of the following. So I didn't really know how to handle it. But
yeah,
I try to do the opposite now in college, in my friendship circles. And just stay as humble as possible and treat everyone equally.
That's really cool. I kind of remember feeling that way the first couple times I went on national television. Mm-hmm. Like when I got my regular spot on the Today Show, I kind of feel like the same way. I was like, oh, like I am on the Today Show every month. I'm a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I would be too.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I'm like fangirling over you on the side. I'm like, oh, the Today Show.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I kind of got that way as well. Like when I was doing the Dr. Oz show and all those shows, I feel like my ego got big for a while of like, look at me, look at me, look at me. Like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I pushed a lot of people away because that was my identity for a little bit. My identity was wrapped up in what I did instead of like who I was. And so I had to kind of recheck myself and then became like super grateful for the platform that I had been given. And now I consider it a gift. Like whenever I get asked to do anything like that, or even one of my clients gets on one of those shows. Mm-hmm. We had a client on GMA a couple months ago, and I was literally bawling on the side of the set because I just felt like incredibly grateful to be able to provide that opportunity for her. I thought that was really cool. But it's really cool to hear you recognize that, because a lot of people I don't think would recognize that.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not trying to present myself as someone who's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unrealistic to say everyone, when they get a million followers in 6 months, is like, oh, I'm just going to go back to my ordinary life. Like, you know, it's a lot to handle. And I think I've realized that. I look back now and having had that following for like 4 years, I kind of have a better understanding of what it is and how to handle it and how to practice gratitude, as you said.
Yep.
And at the same time, also like celebrating these accomplishments and what you do have. I feel like releasing a book was a look at me moment, and that's okay.
I think you should.
You're allowed to celebrate yourself once in a while, but at the same time, like showing how grateful you are and like practicing gratitude. When I had my book party, I had this long ass speech at my book party, just like thanking like 20 people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, everyone's just going to be so bored during this speech. But I was like, I need to thank the florist. I need to thank the PR. I need to thank the restaurant. I need to thank the publisher. Yep. And like, I went down the list and I was like, people are going to hate me, but that's more than just me.
Yeah, exactly. It takes a whole team to make something like this go off. I mean, you've done a phenomenal job. I mean, you don't have to talk about specific sales numbers, but I think when we look at somebody that has so many millions of followers on TikTok, you probably could have sold a lot of books pretty quickly with them coming to a launch party or even when the launch came out. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people would kill for that kind of exposure. So did you have really good, solid sales?
Yeah. So upon the pre-order launch, the pre-order launch was March 1st. The book came out September 19th. It became a Barnes & Noble bestseller in the first 24 hours of the pre-order
launch. Congratulations.
Thank you. So that was crazy.
Yeah.
And then I think at its peak on Barnes & Noble, it was number 160 something, which keep in mind, there's like a million books on Barnes & Noble. I had to remind myself of that too.
Yeah.
I was like, 160. Like
out of millions of books.
That's not a bestseller. And then my book agent was like, trust me, like it's good. And I think on Amazon, like 8,000 or something at its peak. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It hit number one in Dating and Intimacy on Amazon at its peak. At one point, it was 17 Magazine's number one most anticipated YA book of 2023.
That's amazing.
So that's like kind of the cookie cutter
accolades.
That's
huge.
It was crazy. It was, like, it was humbling. Especially the Barnes & Noble thing. I just opened up the book on Barnes & Noble and it had like the little bestseller tag on it after 24 hours. And it's crazy. I mean, I've been writing books for a very long time and I never thought I would be able to do this on my own. It was very hard to, I guess, get the courage to step out of my mom's shadow because she is so accomplished herself. Mm-hmm. She's so accomplished in that field and she's written so many books herself. So I didn't know if I could do it by myself. But this really just gave me the confidence and the reassurance that I can do it by myself and I'm capable of being a writer in my own right.
Yep.
So it was a proud moment.
Yeah, you should be proud. And I think the greatest gift as parents that we want to do is build our kids up to show them that they can do it and then push themselves off to their own and like let them fly by themselves, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the gift that I want my girls to see is you can do anything and like I can give you the skills and the gifts, but then you can go and do this. We've given you everything that you need. So now you can take it. And it sounds like your mom did a great job.
She's like too good of a mom.
Oh.
Sometimes I tell her to stop. I'm like, you're too nice.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, she's just super inspiring. She's been writing for a very long time. And I grew up just watching her type away at her computer, kind of with her back to me in her office and just admiring her and wanting to be like her one day. And it's been really nice to have that inspiration, but also develop my own passions and interests. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very interested, for example, in health and fitness writing because mm-hmm. I'm a runner. And that's something she never really did as much.
Yep.
So it kind of makes me more of an individual. It doesn't make me like a clone of my mom. So I have nothing but like nice things to say about her.
That's amazing. My girls always tell me like, Mom, you're the best mom ever. I want to be like you when I grow up. And that
yeah.
I think that those words are probably like the best words in my life when they say mm-hmm. things like that. And we're very, very close. Like, I'm a single mom. So I'm very, very close with all of my daughters and my mm-hmm. son. But there's a special bond, I think, between mom and daughters.
Definitely. They might get a little catty when they grow up a little.
Well, actually, yeah, they get catty with each other. That's for sure. I'm like, okay, time out. Stop fighting.
You see in the book, there is a mom-daughter fight mm-hmm. in there where I come home at 1 a.m. with a strange boy. She freaks out on me. It's like Mother's Day. And I'm like screaming at her, like, I hate you. I hate you. Like, you're never going to make me have a relationship. And, you know, you go through your ups and downs.
Yep.
But in the end, you always find your way back to each other. It's mm-hmm. that special bond.
It is. And, you know, your mom will fight for you.
She will.
She will fight.
I know. Yeah. Like, sometimes too much. But, like, I don't know.
There's a story. I'm going to tell you the story. There was a kid. My kids are, like, we lived too close to their elementary school, so they always had to walk. So I let them walk home this one day. My daughter's going to tell you me for saying this, but one of her guy friends was like, I'm going to go trip your sister. My oldest daughter was giggling, so she didn't say no. So he went and tripped my middle daughter, and she fell on her face and was bleeding. And the next day, what do you know, I get in my car, and I'm like, you guys walk home again, okay? Mm-hmm. I get in my car, I roll up on this boy, roll down the window.
Stop it.
If you ever touch my daughter again, I will call your parents and invite them over for dinner, and we will all sit down and have this conversation. And I will call the principal, and you will get suspended. And the look on his face, he was like, and I embarrassed the heck out of my girls. They were like, Mom, why did you do that? I'm like, because that boy will never touch you again.
Exactly.
Ever.
And they'll thank you one day, even if they're embarrassed
now.
They do. Now.
This was maybe 3 or 4 years ago that it happened.
Oh, okay.
But I said, nobody will ever put a hand on you guys.
No.
Ever. And if I have to embarrass you now to get that to change, so that's the kind of moms it sounds like me and your mom are.
Yes.
Like, it's not.
They fight for you.
You fight for you. So as a mom of teen girls, reading through this book, I gained a lot. But like, what are some things that people listening, they have teen girls and they want to grab this. What are some things that they can take away from it as a teen writing this for teens? How can we as moms establish that close relationship with our girls so they'll come to us with the hard stuff? Because I think that's always the challenge. We want to be the safe place for our daughters, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to boys. I remember growing up, I don't feel like I had anybody to talk to about that kind of
right.
stuff. How can we be the safe place for our kids, for our daughters, so they feel like they can come to us? Or maybe we find a safe place for them and know that mm-hmm. it's not us,
yeah.
right?
I think it starts with creating a no judgment safe zone and making your child feel like they can express however they feel and that you won't criticize them for it, even if it's something you don't agree with. Just giving them the space to be open about their feelings or what they're going through, letting them ask questions and being okay with it if they don't agree with your answers, I think is important. Letting them make mistakes, realizing they're not perfect and it's just part of growing up. And I think also presenting a tool like this is just showing your child that these are conversations that you're not afraid to have with them. In this book, yes, it's for 13 to 18 year olds. I talk about sex in a very comfortable way for a 13 year old because this is a conversation that needs to be had
yep.
as early as 13.
You don't want the kids' school to have it. You need to have it with the kids before.
You need to have
yeah.
it. Yeah. I think the way it's talked about in this book is very non-confrontational, which is important. It's not saying get a condom, like all the stuff you learn in school.
Right.
School is teaching them sex ed. That's not what they need from their mom.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they need from a mom, what they need from this book, from a role model like me, is they need to learn like the emotional part of it.
Mm-hmm.
What you hear in this book is what happens like leading into a potential sexual experience that like goes wrong and the feelings that are attached to that of complete and utter failure and mm-hmm. rejection and feeling not worthy of anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So reading a story like that and just creating a sense of awareness in your child, like this may happen, guys, teenage boys can really suck. They have the emotional maturity of like a 2-year-old.
Yep.
They can suck. So I think presenting a tool like this to your child and saying, hey, this might happen. Let's talk about how this might make you feel and know that if this happens, I'm here. And do you have any questions about situations like this? So this is presenting potential situations in a way that I've actually gone through and opening up the conversation.
Yeah.
That was kind of a long form answer.
No, that's a brilliant answer because I think you don't know what's going to happen until it happens, right? Mm-hmm. So if they are prepared to realize that a situation that comes up, it doesn't make them bad.
Yeah.
It happens a lot of times. Guys don't treat you right, not because you're bad. It's because mm-hmm. they have issues in their past that make them act that
right.
way. They will treat you poorly because of this. Or maybe you're not interested in them because of this. Like, it doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you any less valuable. It's because they have crap that they need to deal with. It doesn't define your worth. And to give them that safe space. One of my kids had an issue where one person chose a material object over them. And that made them feel like, what's wrong with me? And instead of getting into a relationship with them, they chose a material object as more important than them. And that made them feel less valued. And so because we were able to talk about it, it's like, that's not you.
Right.
That's because they have issues with this other stuff.
Teenage girls just want to feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a tool like this when I was 16 or even 18, it would have helped me so much.
Yep.
Just knowing that other people were going through it.
Yes.
Because when you're going through a breakup, it almost feels like grief. Like you feel so alone.
True.
All I wanted was for someone to tell me everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't believe it. I think if I read something like this, I mean, the detail of when I found out my ex was breaking up with me is so specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what did my surroundings look like? What it smell like? What it feel like in my fingers and my toes and dropping to the ground? It's very, very specific. And I wanted a teenage girl to read that and be like, oh my God, I resonate with this feeling. I feel so heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to make someone recover from a breakup.
Yep.
Not the lectures you hear at school, not whatever you read online from like a how-to website. It's people's stories.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I remember my first serious boyfriend when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
I found out after we had gotten really serious that he was dating his ex-girlfriend at the same time. And I just remember, like, I had given myself to him and I was crushed, like absolutely crushed.
16-year-old boys have no self-awareness.
No. And I had no idea. I had nobody to talk to about it. I had nobody to talk to about it. It's so lonely because you feel like there's no safe place to go. You feel shame, like, there's something wrong with me. Why didn't I know better? You question yourself. And all of these kind of things. So as parents too, as a mom, I'm always like, okay, I've made these mistakes myself.
Mm.
As a 16-year-old kid, what would I have needed from my parents? Safety, security, a shoulder to cry on, non-judgmental, to not get in trouble for decisions that I had made, and understanding. So I try to put myself in those shoes, but still it comes off as I'm the parent.
You're always going to be the parent. You say like a shoulder to cry on. Sometimes they just don't want to be lectured. They just want to sit in silence with someone. They just want a hug. I think like I have a whole chapter in my book about my anxiety, which we can talk about too.
Mm-hmm.
But all I wanted was someone to hug and to hold and make me feel good. I didn't want the lecturing and the logic, anyone telling me, oh, you shouldn't be feeling this way, or you should be feeling this way, or this is normal, this is not normal. It was all noise. I just wanted silence and I just wanted to hold someone. And sometimes that's all your daughter needs.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. A lot of times if somebody's sad, like sleep in bed with me or something like that, just because I feel like that helps. This has been amazing. I think that your wisdom is like far beyond 21.
Oh, thank you. It's therapy.
I always say that. People are like, you're so smart. I'm like, it's therapy. It's like,
I know. Even like in conversations I have with my friends and my boyfriend now, the way I look at life has been so transformed because of therapy and just owning my emotions in a way that I never did before.
Yep. I've been in therapy for so long. And I always say it's like, working out for your body, it's like that for my mind. I need it. I enjoy peeling back the layers on an onion and seeing what's underneath there so I can get better, become a better person, better human, a better friend, a better mom, all of those things. So what's next for you? Like, what is your goals for the future? I mean, you have so much amazingness ahead of you. I feel like this might be one of those interviews where I'm like interviewing a star and they're just about to like take off.
Stop it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm kind of just, I don't know, your average Joe. I'm looking for a job.
You are not an average Joe, first of all.
Graduating college. Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at a job in journalism?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying.
Yeah. You know, the girl I had in just before here wrote for the New York Times.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Did you get to talk to her?
Oh, dang. Yeah. I'm just looking for jobs, trying to find the perfect fit. I'm graduating in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so ready to be out.
Yeah, I'm done out of this place.
I'm so done. It's been a lot. I did not get homeschooled once my entire life. I was very proud of that.
Yeah.
There were so many points where I could have, like when I was acting, when I was writing the book, so many points where I could have done it, but I just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, thank God.
Yeah.
Besides that, in terms of another book, it's a maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas brewing, but I always have ideas brewing, so yeah. I don't really know. But we'll see what happens. Right now, kind of just focused on getting a job, continuing with social media. And yeah, seeing where the wind blows.
That's so incredible. As we kind of wrap up this interview, I want to get your take on book talk.
Okay.
Because as a publicist, I'm always looking at the future of where does PR go? I'm a different type of publicist. I own a PR agency, but I come at it from the perspective of I didn't go to school for PR. I came from it from the world of television and being an influencer and an author. So obviously we have traditional PR, which is television, press writing, you know, journalism, things like that. But also we can't ignore what's going on TikTok, Instagram, all of those types of things. How much of book talk are you a part of? Did you use it in your launch strategies? Do you partake in it? Do you know much about it?
If I'm being totally honest, not really. I did not use it too much in my book launch strategy. I mean, I sent it to a few book talkers. I think more so Bookstagram. I think that's what it called. I sent it to more Instagrammers who reviewed the book, and I saw more traction there. There are a lot of book talkers, I think, that are posting and reviewing their favorite books. The issue I've come across in book talk is it's just very like niche. Like, these people have specific books they read and they don't want to branch outside it.
Right.
So I'll reach out to someone and they'll say like, sorry, I'm only reviewing fantasy books. Or I'll reach out to someone who reads romance books and they'll say, sorry, I don't read nonfiction. So
right.
Very specific about the types of books they read. And this could be totally wrong, but I feel like they get these books themselves and these are things they outsource. They seem like very authentic. They don't really seem like the type of people who will look at all these PR mailings and be like, okay, which one of these am I going to? I could be wrong, but from what I've seen, it's just very niche based.
It is. Yeah, I agree with that. I would say that if I was a book talker, I would probably do it more authentically because it seems like the people that are reading enjoy reading. So they're going to want to read the books that they want to read, right?
Yeah.
What they're interested in. I've also seen a lot of book talkers that are charging ridiculous amounts of money.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
For reviews. So you have to think about, is it going to give you a good ROI in the end?
You never know.
You never know. Just like with PR, you never know, right?
Right.
What that is going to be.
Yeah. So many people are charging for marketing now. You never know. I came across in my book launch, there were like magazines that were trying to charge for articles. I mean, as a journalist, that shocks me.
Yeah.
That is just like the absolute opposite of like journalistic integrity.
Yep.
And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because like I do a lot of product unboxings of stuff I get sent, but it's usually pretty obvious like when I get sent something. If I'm not going to have someone pay me for a video unless it's completely shown, like this is an ad, this is a sponsored piece of content.
Right.
But that's not being done a lot.
Now, there's been a lot of controversy even in the podcasting world because a lot of podcasts are charging a ridiculous amount of money to go on their shows now and not disclosing it. So there's a lot of controversy with that. I got pitched for a podcast the other day. They wanted $8,500.
Yep.
I was like, are you freaking kidding me? And you're not even disclosing that all of your guests are paid, which is illegal.
Right.
So
it needs to be disclosed.
It needs to be disclosed. And
like, if you're
not
getting paid, just disclose it.
Yeah. A lot of podcasts aren't doing that. And from a reporter and journalist, my background comes from more of that.
Yeah.
Same with you. There's a lot of pay to play going on, which I understand because being a host of a syndicated show, like we charge for some of our guests and things like that. But you're paying for airtime and things like that. There's a new wave. There's earned media, paid media. There's space for all of it, but you have to disclose it in anything. But when it comes to journalism, that to me is advertising. The whole magazine is advertising. This is a paid advertisement.
It's just so sad to me that magazines are charging for articles. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, like you read Vogue and you see an Estee Lauder ad. That's clearly an ad. It's not like that. It's like people featured, not people, the magazine, like people featured in magazines. And it's just not disclosed that they paid the magazine to be in it. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. As someone in PR, we're always trying to navigate. We know these people are charging. We're not paying for that. Because the more people talk about you organically, the more it shows that that's more authentic.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, like, I'm so impressed by you, your maturity, your understanding of the industry. And I can't wait to see what you do.
Thank you.
I'm going to be watching because I think you have all of the tools to be anything that you want, whether it's a journalist, whether it's in business or whatever that is. Like, the sky's the limit.
Thank you.
Like, I'm so impressed. So I hope that you can continue on with TikTok and inspiring girls like my girls who are watching you.
Oh.
It makes me feel good to know that the people that are making the content for girls like mine are thinking about the fact that their audiences are impressionable. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot to us parents. And the fact that you're able to write this book to help us parents as well to navigate those tough conversations so they don't feel alone. I think that's really valuable.
Even if you don't read it with your kid, I feel like moms can read this and just get such a good understanding of what it's like to be a teenager living in the age of social media from a teenage perspective.
Yeah, because we definitely did not have social media growing up.
No, the stories I've heard from my mom, it was totally different.
Yeah. Even the other day, on Friday, actually, my youngest daughter saw that all of her best friends were hanging out on TikTok. They were doing TikToks without her. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have known that until I got to school on Monday. So I wouldn't have had to spend the whole weekend sad knowing that all of my friends were hanging out without me. But you can see that in real time that they've left you out. And then you think, what did I do wrong? Why are they mad at me?
Right.
There's just so much that has changed. So then as parents, we have to be able to understand, like, I just saw, which is funny, all of her friends follow me on TikTok and like my stuff or tag me. When they're like hanging out, they'll tag me because my 10-year-old doesn't have TikTok. She just uses my TikTok. So I'm like, you got to stop messaging people from my TikTok because like they think it's me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how are you feeling about that? To check in with her and make sure she's okay. Because yes, we didn't deal with that as parents, but like we need to understand that that's very harmful and hurtful and put ourselves in those shoes.
Yeah, I experienced that a lot in high school. Mm-hmm. I think I hit a point though where I just didn't care. And I realized these weren't people I wanted to be friends with anyway. I feel like now I have a very good judge of character, better than I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I just like don't take the bullshit anymore. If someone does something like that, I don't waste my time trying to make plans with them.
Right.
They get like 3 strikes and they're out.
Yep. No, that's a good way to put it. If you don't have time, then why would I make time for you?
Exactly.
I always say, if you don't understand me, you don't get to be in my circle.
Exactly.
You know? That's a privilege, you know? Well, thank you so much for being on. How can people find you if they want to go and buy the book and follow you on social media?
So you can find my real life rom-com on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, basically wherever you can get a book. And you can find me on social media at Carrie Burke with 2 K's on everything.
Yeah. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I appreciate this. And I know everybody listening will just adore you like I do on social media.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you for making my daughter smile.
Oh, thank you.
We have to do a reel. I have to do like a TikTok with her after.
I want to sign the book for her.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Beyond the Cover podcast. For behind the scenes clips, footage, and reels of this show, go to laurencabello.com and find all of our social media links where you can find TikToks and Instagram and Facebook reels on all of our socials. Search me on Lauren Cabello on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, and you will be able to find all of the behind the scenes video clips. You can also watch the video of this podcast on youtube.com/Lauren Cabello to watch the video. And thank you to our sponsor, which is Leverage with Media PR, a book PR agency for nonfiction celebrity and entrepreneurial authors to help you launch your book so that you can become a best-selling author. So thank you again for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I would love for you to subscribe and share the show for anybody who wants to know the latest, greatest authors and also maybe know a little bit more about launching your book. Thanks so much and have a great day.